This is a story about falling through the cracks. How does a regular person with a modest income survive living year-round in the Hamptons?
I move all the time, from room to room, apartment to apartment, at least every 9 months in order to be able to have a place to live in a seasonal economy. Every season in the Hamptons, it's a game of musical chairs, and those who get left without a roof are now literally living in tents, rooms, sheds, and campers. Finding a place to hang our hats at prices we can afford is only the first hurdle. There simply are no houses available to rent year-round. The homeowners rent their houses for 3 to 4 months every year to help pay their mortgages, and then they move into small rooms and apartments. Here's the thing. This is where everyone wants to live. So, of course, it's difficult. But it wasn't always this difficult.
Here are four examples of single women who are managing to build lives in a seasonal economy designed for the super rich without completely losing their minds. This is Phantom Hampton. Phantom Hampton is the podcast with stories from where the rest of us live. I live in a 10 by 10 foot room. I am 54 years old, and this story got really personal. I set out to do a story about women falling through the cracks, mostly because I had been falling through the cracks, and I couldn't figure out if it was me or the system I was attempting to live in. So I've nailed down what my worst fear is. My worst fear is being that lady pushing the shopping cart with all of her stuff. The three women I have chosen to interview did not want their names used. One wanted her voice changed, and one refused to speak on tape. So there's a lot of shame involved in this. My first ingenious woman has managed to bypass the zoning restrictions and has embraced mobility as her solution.
This is Homer. He's 27 feet long, the 1992 Gulfstream. It's got a Ford Econoline van front. He's flying Key West colors. He's a good truck. My cat is inside, my road cat.
Hey, cover girl. Hi, buddy.
Oh, I bought him in January on eBay. The bid was $1,500, so I had this bidding war with two other people at the last minute, and I bought Homer for $2,750.
Shall I describe it to you for your listening audience?
Will you, please?
So, this is the kitty's room, up above the driver's seat, and she likes to hang out up here in the window. She sleeps with me in my bed. She's a good cat.
Hey, Cover, you want in? What do you got to say, baby?
You want to say something. Oh.
Tell me about your reticence to share this with people.
I guess it's at least twofold. When I tell people I'm doing this, the first thing they ask is, well, where are you going to put it? And the reason they ask that is because of the East Hampton Town Code. It's tight. Auxiliary structures, you know, illegal rentals, blah, blah, blah. So I don't object to having four stationary walls. I do qualify as a low-income person out here, even though I work 40 to 60 hours a week, 6 months out of the year, and scrap around in the winter like we all do. Because let's face it, it's a seasonal economy out here. But it's gorgeous. I love being out here in the summer. I love being out here in the winter. Homer doesn't love being out here in the winter. I'll just skim through it. So I was raised on the road. My father was in the military. I never had a home or extended family or any kind of roots. I never felt an attachment to a place.
So being sort of mobile is kind of nostalgic for you in a way.
I really have no other choice.
Well, I know. I mean, yeah. I live in a room much smaller than your camper.
Yes. So this folds down to a bed. That folds down to a bed. I can't imagine taking a shower in this shower. What I am going to do with this shower is turn it into an aquaponics experiment. Aquaponics means a tank full of fish at the bottom with PVC pipe and plants running up in a vertical garden arrangement.
Well, how could the elderly do this?
I know, and RVs are for retired people, right? So why did this ever happen?
Like,
the reason it's high is because the wheels are under here. So the wheels are under here,
but even if you could step up into it.
Yeah, you got to sit down here and your knees are up on your boobs like that.
So
they have such a thing as a blow-up bathtub.
I know.
It's $89 and I'm totally getting it.
Watch your step in here.
This is my composting toilet.
Oh, okay.
To compost humanure, you need to get your compost pile really hot. So there's certain ways to do that. I would like to direct you and your listeners to the Humanure Handbook, available on Amazon.com.
Humanure!
If you turn it to ash, you can't use it for compost. Ashes to ashes and dust to dust.
And you have all your high heels.
I do. I have no place for shoes. Just because you're living tiny doesn't mean you can't live fabulous. Yeah.
This is
the new American dream. Everybody's doing it. It's been mobile a couple times. But it's got a little, some bugs.
But it could go from, like, to a different driveway.
Oh, yeah, and it's going to Florida this winter.
It is?
I'm snowbirding. I'm 39, I'm snowbirding. I'm living the dream, Cara. I'm living the dream. I have propane, generator, electricity on board. I'm ditching the generator because it's loud and it uses gasoline, and I'm installing solar panels because that's clean and quiet. And
gotcha.
That takes me off the grid. That takes me wherever I want to go. When I have solar panels, run my refrigerator, and I can park in a parking lot. Composting toilet, I can park in a parking lot. Which brings me to the second reason I don't want to tell anybody mm-hmm. who I am or where I am or what I'm doing mm-hmm. because of scarcity.
Scarcity?
Well, if I know a cool spot and I tell people about it, next thing you know, there's no room for me at the cool spot that I know.
But how many people do you know that are going to want a cool spot for their RV?
Everybody. Everybody wants it, Cara. You can't have it.
If people get wind of this...
Oh, it's a revolution. It's a tiny house revolution. It's every bit of a revolution. I was gung-ho to build a tiny house on wheels. I found a place to do it. I asked my friend, I'm like, man, can I build my tiny house at your place? He's sitting over there with 20 acres. And so then I said, all right, man, I'm going to go up to Riverhead Trailer this weekend. Oh, see, now's not a good time. He was doing some building over there of his own.
He was probably freaked out because they would think he was building a little cottage.
Right. Maybe. Which brings us back to reason number one, the East Hampton Town Code.
Yeah.
And people are scared to death of this. I don't know if they cut your arms off or lock you in jail or tattoo sinner on your forehead. I don't know what happens to you if you violate the East Hampton Town Code, but it's serious. This was my driest winter yet here as far as work. And it just so happened. I had put away some money for the winter, so I spent it all on Homer, and then I had to spend $500 more to get him registered. So the rest of the winter, I sat at home with no gas. I had some food stamps. So I'm just like sitting at home alone with my wood-burning stove and no gas and eating my food stamps. And the only time I left my house was to go to therapy or yoga. I had my priorities in line. Right. Forget about it. If you don't take care of your physical and mental health, all the money in the world is not going to help you. Out here is magical. There is something truly magical about being out here. I don't lock my doors. That's amazing. The water's gorgeous. I go at night.
Would you swim?
Not by myself. I'm not in the ocean. I swim the bay at night. Mm-hmm. I get naked and swim in the bay at night.
That's great. I love swimming in the bay.
I love swimming in the bay too. I have noticed or learned or discovered that when you move every 2 to 3 years, there are certain things you just don't get. So I kept not getting these things that I want, and I couldn't figure out why. And I thought it was me, but it was just a space-time geographical event that some things take time. And I'm from the right now culture. It's now or never. Oh, I'm not getting this thing now. Maybe it's in California. Oh, that thing's not there either. Maybe it's down in Mexico. But that's not how things work. So if you want to get anything worthwhile, you have to stay somewhere, put your time in. I was kind of like, well, I'll give it one more summer, and if things don't work out, I was going to backtrack and start going places I'd already been. I thought, I'm not going any new places. I'm going to go back to places I've already been, which sounded like sound logic to my deranged brain. So, but things started looking up. You know, I got this job that's going to turn into a career for me. This is my plan now. I can make the southern migration each year. I get to go down to Florida and swim with the manatees. So I can go find new and unique and interesting things to bring back for my nursery. Because nobody else wants to do this. I want to do this. I have homers.
So there was the middle class. They were able to purchase cars, raise families, buy food, have a house. The comparable income you would have to have to get those things.
I see.
You would need to make
$130,000. No! No! I'm about $100,000 short of that mark.
Do you think your circumstances of living out here and not quite, you know, making enough to live out here, do you think those have to do with the choices you made or circumstances beyond your control? I ask myself that.
And what did you come up with?
I came up with that I used to beat myself up that...
And now?
Now I realize that there are so many people just barely making it.
Right.
But did I make the choice to be an artist? Did I make the choice to...
Did you make the choice that art should be done for free and for the love and corporate banking should pay money?
I know.
Those are not choices that you made.
I wanted to talk about those of us falling through the cracks.
Oh, that's a great thing to talk about.
But... you're not falling through the cracks. You're like having a good time. Well,
I'm like have one foot on each side of the crack. One false move and I will slide through that crack.
Well, that's the thing. We were living, there were four of us.
Four of us. Four of us in the house. Four people, four cats. Okay. But I was falling through the cracks. Me and you were falling in the same crack.
We were sharing the same gut there.
We were sharing the crack.
My second ingenious woman is hopping from one abode to another every 6 to 9 months in order to afford to live in the place she loves. To her, rootlessness goes hand in hand with being partnerless.
I have the dream of the house, which is very much the American dream, and it's probably shared by everybody around the world because humans tend to want houses and want their little plot of land. I want to be able to find a place to live. I want to set up a house. I just want to set up a house. I will live in a 30 by 12 foot box. I just want to be able to paint the walls and the shutters and know that I'm not going to get displaced and have my landlord come to me in a year and say, I'm going to break your lease and increase the rent by $1,000. That's all I want. It just sucks when you have a good education, you have a master's degree, and you thought that you were building a career that was going to financially allow you to be stable, enjoy life, and live the places you want to live. I have a decent income. I can't find a house that I can afford that I can take on a roommate, or I could move. There's just nowhere to move to. You know, the next piece of that is that you go to the real estate agents and your friends, and you say, this is my budget, and they say you can't get that anymore for your budget. So I've seen this place 15 to 20 years of renting out here. Now someone literally in my town is saying, there is no housing for you, period. Unless you want to spend 3 months floating around and renting a room from a friend, then you could get a winter rental. But there's no way you can get a year-round rental in your own town. Right. I'm very cautious to complain about my situation when there are people who are facing the exact same challenges and have much less income and have struggled a lot more. I have a friend who's left his family for 10 years. He's a legal immigrant and he can't go home. He hasn't seen his son in 10 years because he's trying to make good money in order so that he could eventually have the house as well. We humans, we tend to have the same goals, and how you choose to get there, what sacrifices you want to make, whether you want to maintain a high quality of life and live by the sea, whether you're willing to work 16-hour days at a desk in New York City. And I chose not to do the financial jobs and not to sit at a desk in New York City. Everybody's in the same boat who's under a certain income level. It's turning out to be anybody with an income less than probably 150 to 200,000 can't stay. And that's a really high income. Get your business model right. You can landscape or build designer pools and make big income, or you could be a chef. You could sell real estate. Every last bit of property seems to have been purchased by somebody that wants to invest in real estate instead of investing in the stock market. And they don't have housing stock anymore. They don't have small houses. All the small houses are getting torn down and replaced with larger houses, and you used to be able to at least find one of those small houses. So unless we invest out here in low and middle income housing, you're never going to get the literal houses and apartments for us to be able to afford. So that's one storyline, and we're on the eastern end of an island, and we can't expand. Every time there's gentrification or development in an area, the lower classes, lesser incomes get moved to the outskirts, and we've hit the end of Long Island, so you can't go anywhere. So a lot of people don't get to spend time with their families because they're sitting in their car. Now, I'm out here. I get to go swimming at 6 o'clock if I want. That's why I've picked this lifestyle.
But this summer, your landlord, who owns the building, has decided to move upstairs with you so that she can earn money renting her place out. And now there's 3 people living in that apartment.
Well, the only aspect that's uncomfortable about that was that I had asked in my lease to write in a no greater than 10% rent increase when renewing in order to protect myself. And that was overrun, where the landlord said, they can actually increase your rent by $1,100, and I'm going to do that. And I said, well, what about the contract? And she said, well, it's my property. I can take it back. But I'm not going to go there with this friend. I'm not going to push it.
Right now, for the next 2 weeks, you are sleeping on an air mattress in your own apartment.
But yeah, so I've got 2 roommates right now, and I'm sleeping on the floor in order to make money, in order to offset all the other expenses. But I think a lot of people do that. They move in some capacity out here for 3 months in the summer, and everybody has to move. So I could either switch careers and become and run a landscaping business or a construction business and develop a whole new skill set, or I could cut my costs, and I can't seem to cut my costs.
I blamed myself for a long time, and now I can sort of see that it was partly my decisions that landed me here and partly the way the economy works.
And I started to talk to other women who hadn't decided to follow that. We decided to do things that interested us in life and travel and have interesting careers.
Well said. And this is the second part of, I think there is a statement to be made here about what I consider my generation of women and where we are in our careers and where we are with the whole finding the husband situation. In my situation, I've chosen to live in this place. I have a career path that makes me a decent income, but I don't have a partner to make an investment with. You know, this is kind of cliche, but how can one afford to have a child? Most women in their mid to late 30s would be married and not in this situation. That's why I just wonder if this is something new to my generation, to my income level.
Do you know people in their 30s out here who are able to do that, who aren't struggling?
Sure. I've watched my friends over 20 years choose different career paths. Their kids are at Ross. They're making millions of dollars. And we were in the same starting place in our early 20s. I do not want the lifestyle of any of these super wealthy people. I find most of them, their lives to be extraordinarily boring. I think I have a very rich life out here. So actually, this goes back to your original question. Why am I out here? I actually really love my life out here.
I know.
I love going to the farms of the North Fork and the farms of the South Fork as well. I love swimming. I find there to be a pretty interesting and diverse group of people out here.
Yeah, maybe the story
so I should
will
stop complaining. I've made it through.
Whining in the Hamptons.
Yeah, exactly. Poor little girl. He's whining in the Hamptons. No, it's true.
But this is about the stories you don't hear in the Hamptons. These have to be told too. There's a whole class of us living like this.
I think East Hampton Town might even admit they can't pay their employees enough money to buy into this community.
But they can't pay their employees enough to rent in this community. Most of us have given up the idea of owning here. I just want a little place nobody can take away from me. That emergency mindset is terrible.
I would be very keen to fix up a house on my own if I could get the mortgage. I will gladly find an old fixer-upper. I'll make it work, but I can't find it on the South Fork anymore. This is what the local fishermen's children said 20 years ago. It's the same old story. So now it's just my turn to get displaced, and I will probably have to leave. So now I'm going to go displace farmers' children on the North Fork. It's taken me many, many years to build up my businesses out here and what I do. So I'd have to totally rebuild my work life somewhere else, and then also my whole support network. Although somebody else might say it gives you a lot of freedom. I could move to Colorado and be a ski bum and have a good life there. So the place, the landscape, the place, and a sense of belonging to a community is what keeps me here. And I don't really want to start from scratch on all of that. Oh. I just don't want to complain on record because it was choices. There were choices along the way. And yeah. I remember from a very young age, not my parents, but other people's parents, what do you want to do? What do you want to be? And how are you going to make money at that?
Investment bankers.
Yeah. And I see my friends that did what their parents wanted to do, and their lives look so boring to me. That's their choice.
Are they happy?
I have no clue. I have no clue. But I don't want their life. Yeah, so I picked another path, and now I've got to face the consequences of it.
Okay.
As she lives her life as the woman American, we often seem to charge her with the responsibility of getting more out of the family purse than is there. Her art of working with the family helps provide us with the daily necessities and perhaps some of our delightful American privileges of life.
This image of the shopping bag lady really started to haunt me in my late 40s because life hadn't worked out for me the way I perceived that it had for others. I had moved to Berlin to try and make a new life because I couldn't seem to manage to make one here. And in Berlin, I started seeing my specter on the streets there, and she wasn't much older than me. I think that's what scared me so much. I would cross the street to avoid her. She was slim and quiet, and she was really scaled down from the New York bag ladies. But the thing about her is that her eyes were dead. I imagined that this was a woman who had once been a risk-taker like me. I found her in soup lines, at churches in Savannah, Georgia, which was my next stop. I was in a state of financial emergency, and my childhood friend had offered me some work in New York City. I was staying in a very old railroad flat on the Upper West Side. It had just been vacated by a mutual friend. He had just died of cancer a few months previously. Jim's change jars still had hundreds of quarters in them, and I used these to take the city bus uptown to my best friend's new apartment. She was moving her family from one apartment on the Upper West Side to another, and she was paying me to pack and paint and organize. And then one day, she wanted me to push an old shopping cart with loose ends from her old apartment to her new one. It was a distance of maybe 5 or 6 blocks. This shopping cart had a broken wheel, and so I was, in my mind, quadruply conspicuous, pushing this thing, which could barely be pushed, down the street and up and down the curbs. I stopped in a little park, and I had a really good cry. It wasn't just that I couldn't do it. I didn't know how to tell my friend that I couldn't push her stuff across the city in a shopping cart, because I felt so close to this. I felt so close to my specter, and I didn't want to be tempting fate by impersonating her. Oh. I couldn't convince my third ingenious woman to talk to me on tape, but she had no trouble explaining to me how my worst fear had actually turned out to be an advantage for her. The first time we sat down to talk, she confessed to me that she had lived in her car out here in the Hamptons in order to be near her grandson. She took a job cleaning some of the wealthy houses out here and would shower there. And then in the spring and summer and fall, lived in her car. I had finally met somebody who was actually living my worst fear. She doesn't live in her car anymore. And she did have a certain amount of shame around the fact that she had done it and really didn't want people to know. But that was mostly because of her grandson. What she said to me was astonishing, and Lee is an astonishing person. She told me that living in her car was really the greatest freedom that she's ever experienced. She didn't owe anyone anything or have to put up with anything. Suddenly, she wasn't involved in human transactions. The shame she felt was because of what others might think of her if they knew. And then she got lucky, and her name came up for the elderly apartments at the Lutheran church. She was terrified, she told me. How would she manage to live again within 4 stationary walls? Well, she solved this problem by never really moving in. She has no real furniture, and she couldn't buy a bed. She told me she sleeps on a mat under the window so that she can be close to the sky, the air, the rain, so she doesn't have to hear the low rumble of all the TVs in the cubicles that surround her. It's a noise that she finds absolutely terrifying. Nothing ever seems to turn out the way you imagined. Poverty was not what I imagined, nor was being a writer or aging, or being a hair's breadth close to homelessness. We are so defined by our worst fears, often without even knowing it. I was acting out an age-old pattern of not having a place to call my own. And until I was up against it and confronted it, I might never have moved forward. I might have been that woman pushing the shopping cart.
Always, the art is based on saving, by reducing the family needs, as well as by spending, for she spends to save, and saves to spend.
I was so surprised by what these ladies told me. I felt honored to be trusted to tell their stories. This is Phantom Hampton. Phantom Hampton is the podcast with stories from where the rest of us live.